The opinions expressed by the 1.5 doctors on this podcast are for entertainment purposes only. They are not meant to treat or diagnose. If you have a serious condition, seek medical attention immediately.
These are our newly arrived surgeons, Drs. Trowbridge and Greenbaum.
Doctor?
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 And doctor. Well, we miss anyone?
Dr. Stephen Ogden. Dr. Jamie Erie.
Clinical Muscle, presented by Naps Gear, starts.
Yeah. Great Scott.
The doctors are in. Welcome back to Clinical Muscle on Advices Radio Network. I'm your host, Dr. Vijay Puri. Along with me, as always, is the star of the show here, the real doc, the full-on doctor here, Dr. Stephen Ogden. Doc, how you doing?
Good morning, sir. I'm good.
We have 2 weeks before the Arnold. Can you fucking believe that? It's just like we were talking about it not long ago. I think when we first started Clinical Muscle, we were like 15 weeks out or something crazy. Like, I can't believe it's just right around the corner.
I know, and I'm getting more and more excited now. But I don't know if I'm really excited about the Arnold itself or if I'm just excited to come, like,
eat waffles
with you guys.
We discussed this last night. We were talking about how, hey, yeah, bodybuilding's fun, the expo's okay, but man, we got to eat some waffles together. That's fucking badass. That's the best part right there.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I can't wait. I mean, I'm excited now. I was excited before, and then my little meltdown. Now I'm good. I'm back to ready. It's funny you brought that up because I was going to bring that up too. It got here so fast. You know, I'm already starting to think about, oh, I got to do this, and then, but I can't wait, man. I can't wait to see everybody. That's going to be cool, man.
Yeah, that's the
I'm
best.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah, super excited about it. I didn't, this whole time, I've just been excited about going and just meeting everyone, you know, and then seeing you guys, and that's it, really. You know, it's kind of like a halfway, well, it's more of a quarter of the way point for me, but it's a nice meetup spot for everybody, you know. And we'll post up stuff on Facebook and try to organize a place where we can all meet up and hang out a little bit, take some pictures, you know, and then but the show is actually shaping up to be a pretty decent show. Like, there's a lot of buzz, a lot of great competitors in the prejudging. At the Arnold Classic, and we'll be going to the prejudging. I'm not going to the night show. Are you going to stay the whole weekend, or what are you thinking?
No, I'm going to stay. I'm leaving Sunday morning, but I'm not going to the night show. I'm just going to roll out early. I mean, I might even attempt to drive
after waffles. I don't know, man.
Yeah, no, I won't though. I won't.
I was
actually thinking about doing the drive out Friday, staying Saturday, and just making the trip all the way back home after we're done everything, and just getting home at like midnight on Saturday or 2 a.m. or whatever. And I was like, yeah, what if I fuck it, man? I get that's nerve. So I'm probably just going to stay till Sunday, early Sunday, and roll out.
That's probably the best thing. You're a morning person anyways. You don't want to be driving at nighttime, you know?
That shit sucks. I booked my room till Sunday morning, but you know, that way I won't have to stress, but I'll just be out of there early and get home. I'll leave super early. I mean, I might even leave at like 4 or 5 a.m.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Oh, I would do the same thing. I would leave probably about 4 a.m. If it was just me by myself, for sure. I like to go about it like really early, like 4 a.m. is great. Plus you got like 8 hours ahead of you, so you know, you'll still have a big chunk of your day left when you get back, you know?
Yeah. That way I waste my whole weekend away from the family, and you know, not that we have anything going on. But I'm really excited, man. It's funny, I mean, I've been talking to you guys, you know, we've been friends, God, for like almost, you know, maybe a year or more now. It's like, and it's weird that we know each other, but we don't.
That's the fucking, you know? that's the miracle of social media. You know what I mean? It's like you meet people, but then you don't really meet people. You know what I mean? It's like you're connected. Right. You're connected, but you're not really connected until you get that handshake or hug. We're huggers, so it'll be a hug, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I told you, you're gonna get, yeah, you're gonna get a hug. It's gonna be, don't be weirded out. I'm a hugger.
Oh, hell no, I don't get weirded out with hugs, man. I'm a hugger by nature, so I can't really help it. It feels it feels awkward to me to not hug, you know. Then I get all shy and I don't know what to do. You know? So that's like the best icebreaker for me is a big hug. Yeah,
we're good now. You ain't got to worry about being shy with me. I got enough hyperness for everybody.
Yeah, good. I'm gonna be all zombied out, I think, because I'm taking my last cheat meal on Wednesday, which is tomorrow, and then I'm not gonna have another cheat meal until fucking waffle time post prejudging.
Oh man, you're gonna be. Depleted and shredded.
Well, I don't know. We'll see about that. Definitely lean. How's the diet going for you?
Oh, it's good. I'm kind of like at a point now where, I mean, you know, I'm not doing a show or anything. I'm pretty happy where I'm at right now. So yeah, I'm not really, I haven't really changed anything. I haven't really pushed anything. I'm not dropping my calories anymore. I'm still doing my cheat meal and I'm happy with the progress. I just want to stay like I am. Yeah, obviously I always want to get better and leaner and this and that, but you know, I'm doing cardio twice a day already. I'm not going to go to, 600 calories a day. I'm not doing anything extreme, but I'm happy with where I'm at, man. I wanted to get lean and, you know, I'm pretty good.
Yeah. You know, you're not competing. There's no reason to go into like that suffering period. You know what I mean? Just to get to whatever percentage body fat, whatever, unless you get like a photo shoot lined up or something, but who fucking cares? You can just filter the shit out of yourself instead.
Yeah. I don't think I have to worry about any photo shoots with Steve.
Yeah. I'm not into that either. I did that one time with I've done that a couple times. When I was younger, we did just some like different photo stuff with, I don't want to say modeling because it wasn't really modeling, but then again I was holding up protein containers or whatever the hell else, but
but
we did like the last photo shoot that I did was with my wife, my fiance at the time. And that was back in, 2009 or something. Mm-hmm. And I just remember getting lean. I was actually like 8 weeks post contest at that point anyways. So I was already pretty lean, but that was like the last like major photo shoot I've ever had. That was back when I was handsome. So
you're still handsome.
The fuck, those days are long gone. But that was the last photo shoot and probably ever. I don't foresee that ever happening again, But
I'm going to do? I'm thinking about mid-March. I've never really done, I hate using this term, but I've never really stayed on my diet perfectly, but with increased calories, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
To see what would happen. Like I said, I've always done diet. Get lean, summer comes, boom, then it's like the diet's over, really. I mean, I'm eating, I'm doing good, I'm training, but it's not like I'm weighing stuff out, I'm being, sort of perfect. Like,
right.
I want to do that for like 3 months and just keep increasing and just see what happens.
No, I think it's a great idea.
No bullshit, I'm not going to come off the diet, but I actually want to start to increase everything.
Well, you just want to eat more food. Like do what you're doing now, but just like bigger servings kind of deal, right? Like
I'm just curious to see how lean I can stay and how many calories I can push that way. I've never done that, so it's just kind of an experiment I want to do. I've always went from cutting, basically, just to make a long story short, to boom, just going.
To hot dogs and beer.
Yeah. The beer part, but not the hot dogs. Yeah. I still eat chicken and rice, but I drink a beer with it. That's down the beach. That's the problem down the beach.
That's your vice, huh? That's your vice on the beach is the alcohol. I would go for the hot dogs immediately. I don't waste time. If I know the calories are going in, I'm doing something that I really like. It'll be hot dogs and cheeseburgers and pizza.
Hey, my wife likes the girly drinks, the pina coladas and the strawberry diet. It's hard to, man, when you're down there and you're like, it's the atmosphere and it's like, the kids are old enough now, they run and do their thing, so we're out there having a good time. Yeah, so anyway.
Yeah. Hey, it's all about vices, you know, whatever you like to do, you know. So I mean, it's like, I don't like to drink my calories, you know. It's like, I don't know. There's something in me that just says, what a waste of time when you could have like three more pieces of pizza or this cupcake over here or something, you know?
Well, see, that's, therein lies the problem, because I still do that.
Yeah. that's the problem. That's the that's where the love handles come from, I'll tell you.
Yeah. I do. By the end of summer, the love handles are there, but they're gone now, so I'm good.
Yeah, right. Man, though, they're, I tell you what, man, every time, I mean, the older you get, like, the harder those fucking love handles are to come off, I'll tell you. But
Yeah. That's a problem spot, you know. That's stuff. I mean, to make them really, really perfect, that's when you got to go into suffrage mode at our age, I think.
For sure. Yeah, like mine are like at a minimal right now, but I can still I can still pinch something, so it bothers me, you know. So but I know what it'll take to just have it like skinless down there, you know. And I'm just like, I don't think so. I don't think I'm ready to put myself through that right now. I'm actually like where you are right now. What week is this for you as far as dieting goes?
I stopped counting. I'm just going to keep going, because you know what? To be honest with you, honestly, it doesn't bother me. I guess I'm getting used to it, because my life is so sort of boring that it's a perfect setup for that, because I don't do anything else.
Yeah, no, I'm exactly the same way. Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. November 1st to what are we? February. February, almost March 1st, November, December, January, February, March, almost, I don't know, I gotta be, fuck, I have no idea.
I think you're
14 maybe, 12, 13, 14.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense, because I think I'm right around like 11 weeks, yeah. Something along those lines. And
you started like 2 weeks after me.
Right, yeah. So I think this is week 11 for, and like I said, I don't. At this point, I'm pretty content where I'm at, you know. I don't have a drive to be like, I want to be skinless, you know. I don't care that much. I'm like, my abs look good. I've got lines in my pecs. I'm fine. It's good. You know.
Exactly. I'm the same way. And my fasciculations are back. So that's
I saw that.
I was sitting there and I was looking at him going, I was like, that is I had to show you. So, because I wasn't sure if you knew exactly what I meant.
Oh, I knew exactly what you meant. I get the same thing in my teardrop muscles. I don't know why. Just the teardrops.
Yeah. It's weird as shit. And you know what? It's not like it was that. I didn't do any legs. That's not day. That wasn't I could see if it was a day that I trained legs, maybe, but that's just, I'm just sitting there relaxing on the couch watching my calves jump. It's the weirdest fucking shit.
Was it after doing cardio?
No. Well, I mean, I do cardio every day.
Yeah,
so
every day, right.
I guess technically, that's the other thing. That's funny you should bring up cardio. I'm almost thinking of that I'm over – it's you know, I've been having this sensation. I told you about that, and I thought it was maybe something I was doing in the morning, but I'm having this sensation where my legs are always tired. And I'm feeling like they're not recovered. I'm thinking I'm overdoing my cardio. I'm actually thinking about starting to cut back a little bit. So maybe technically that you know, what is a role? And it was after cardio technically, but it was like 8 hours. It wasn't like, I mean, I was relaxing. It wasn't directly, you know, if it was directly, I would think, but yeah, no, I'm sitting here watching it do it now.
I think it's an issue of depletion of some sort, whether it's, like you said, they feel tired, you know. So I'm wondering if it's not just I don't think it's just a mineral imbalance to where, you know, you've got, you know, depleted salt levels and potassium levels are maybe a little bit off or whatever. But I think it's a matter of like overall depletion. Those minerals, like the salt and potassium. I mean, you know how important the sodium potassium pump is in your body. You know, that stops working, you die. But I mean, you've got that throughout all muscle cells, all nerve cells, you know, all whatever cells, and it can drive itself. But once you start depleting like glycogen levels, they start working very kind of inefficiently, I should say.
Right.
Where they're kind of almost misfiring, you know, like there's not enough sodium going in, not enough potassium coming out, whatever. Or just like the pool, like the reserve of sodium potassium goes down because glycogen levels are at a fucking bare minimum, right?
Right. One thing, you know, we talked about this before. I told you I tried all you know, supplementation. I still haven't tried taurine. I haven't tried that. But yeah. I tried, you know, all the other kind of stuff. But the one thing I didn't, I have never really done because I thought I used plenty. And then Dave Pulsnella commented on my Instagram, maybe you're not eating enough salt. And I don't really add salt except for in my condiments and stuff like that. So for the last, you know, I was like, well, I really never tried that. I you know, last time I got blood work done and all my levels were good, you know, as far as my potassium, my sodium and all that. But, you know, even if you're sort of, I want to say low, your body's still going to compensate and keep it regulated somehow. Your blood work can still look normal. Maybe it's not, you know what I mean? That's sure. My, sure. So I don't add extra salt except for hot sauce, which I use a shitload of, by the way. So I figure that has enough sodium in it and mustard. But I've never added extra salt. So I'm going to do that for a little, and mostly because I worry about
water retention,
water retention. But I'm going to do that and see what happens just because, you know, I mean, obviously I thought about that, but I'm like, no, I think I use plenty of sodium, but maybe not. I don't know. You know, we sweat a ton, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like say after your sushi cheat meal, like do you gain any weight the next day or?
Yeah. That's that fucking soy sauce, man.
Yes. See, now that tells me that you are, you know, you probably aren't, like, how much weight are you gaining like that next day?
I'll always say a few, you know, 3 pounds, maybe I'd say. I'm pretty sure, like, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's like 3 pounds. I'm always up after that.
Then chances are you're not getting enough sodium throughout the week. You are depleting it pretty heavily.
That's a good point. Never even thought that. I just figured I ate shitty food. So,
well, yeah, because your body goes into like a hoarding mode when it comes to sodium, right? When it gets that salt, it's like, holy shit, I'm not letting go. Aldosterone goes up, whatever else, you know. But
so I'm gonna try to do that and just see what happens. I'm not worried about it. I just think it's weird, you know, because I mean, I know it's nothing wrong with me.
And then
I saw so many other people commented, I got that shit too. Yeah. My eyes. Now, if it was just, I've had twitches, like people come into me all the time in the office with like your eyeball twitch. That is so common. And we never find anything wrong with people with that. That's
so funny because, yeah, like I get those too every once in a while.
Yeah, that one there is so common.
There's no like scenario where, you know, it's always the same thing. It's just, you know, I could be fat, I could be lean, I could be whatever, but I, you know, the eye twitches come and go. It's really strange. And like you said, yeah. It's so common. We'd like to figure it out. It'd be interesting to find out why.
The eye twitch. I mean, I've had people who've had it, and so usually I try to counsel them, do some basic blood work so that they feel better about it. But I've had some people who just wouldn't, you know, in my career, wouldn't accept that. There's something wrong, where I've went as far as done MRIs of their brain and everything else. They never find anything wrong with them.
Wow. Jeez.
So if your eye twitches, if you have that annoying eye twitch, generally that's not a problem. It's just annoying. It probably stress or something's just irritated nerve wise. And there's actually people who I've read, and I haven't had anybody personally, but I actually talked to an eye doctor that they'll do Botox to calm that down if people have it so bad that it's like sort of distressful.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah,
to calm that down. Anyway.
What do you think of Botox? It's interesting because my wife is in that field and she's, you know, giving these injections fucking all day long.
She does it?
Yeah. Well, that's what they do at her clinic there, Youthology in Brighton.
Okay,
they do, you know, cosmetic injectables, that sort of thing, laser treatments, all that shit, but Botox is one of the things that they do, right? So here's my thoughts on all like the whole Botox thing. Just because you're injecting Botox into one site, it's just like if you're injecting gear, it goes everywhere. Once it hits your bloodstream, that's it's going everywhere, you know. I understand that, you know, it can saturate a certain area because, you know, it is botulism, right? It's a bacterium.
Right.
So yeah, you can get like local paralysis of those muscles, but it's going to go everywhere and eventually it'll make its way to like, nerve conduction and important muscles like your heart or lungs, you know, your diaphragm. Yeah. I just think that, you know, I don't think it's been around long enough to where we can get, you know, decent studies on longevity and Botox.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it done so much with, you know, and for so long, and, you know, even doing plastic surgery rotations and stuff like that, that, I mean, if that could happen, I mean, I've never seen it happen, but I obviously thought about that. And I think it really comes down to technique wise. I mean, if you're, you know, just like in taking testosterone or something else, if you were to somehow inject a vein, you know, with botulism toxin, like if they went wrong and got you in the forehead, you could create a problem, I would think. But there's, I think they do it so, you know, there's people who do it have been doing it so long. But yeah, no, I mean, I think there's always that rare possibility. And also the doses they use, I think would be minimal. You know, to paralyze your diaphragm, for instance, I think it would take a whole shitload of that.
Yeah, because that's an enormous muscle, you know.
Right. So, you know, I'm thinking that, you know, the doses they use are so small, although it don't take much botulism. That's powerful stuff.
Right, yeah. Swallow some botulism and see
strong,
what happens.
That's a strong toxin right there. I mean, that's why we don't give babies honey, right? Because exactly. if it's not, you know, they can get that, and I, you know, that. And then they just get flaccid and limp and, you know, end up on ventilator.
And that's a small amount. That's like basically like, you know, it's just, you know, contaminated food that's barely contaminated.
Now, my wife has been contemplating getting that. Mm-hmm. And now that you just said that, I'm for sure she's not going to. And I was telling her that she's nuts because her fear is exactly what you just said.
Yeah.
The cumulative effect.
That's it.
She wants to do it. She wants to do it, but listen, that girl.
Start light. Just start real light.
I have trouble. So she loves, you know, we've been training for a long time together. I have trouble getting her to take BCAs. she's looking up side effects. Yeah, not that I care. I'm just using that for an example. She's like the most – if she does something, man, if you want to know something, that girl will know every possible side effect there is. I'll give her a medicine if she's sick, and she'll be like, this says it could cause QT prolongation. I'm like, listen, that was one rat. It's not going to happen. Take the damn antibiotic. It's not going to happen to you. But it said that, you know. But, actually, now I can't let her listen to this because she keeps saying, I want to do it. I'm like, go do it. And what's going to happen? You're not going to die. But I guess a remote possibility, but I've never seen it.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's interesting to think about. Like we said, it hasn't really been long enough to where we've seen paralysis of some of these, you know, bigger muscle groups or whatever else. But you do, I've heard anecdotally, like, you know, people having issues like breathing or getting a deep breath, you know, or even like heart palpitations and stuff. So
I mean, you wonder
it's
if
there,
it's,
you know.
Yeah, no. Well, like I said, if they were to nick and get it directly into the bloodstream somehow, that definitely, I mean, I think could cause an issue. I've just never seen it, but I mean, look, we use it for that reason, right? They can use it for, you know, things like torticollis, where someone will have a chronically turned neck, and you give them that, and the muscle releases, so it paralyzes the muscle. So definitely, you know, it's definitely strong, you know, strong stuff. But yeah. I don't know. If I needed it, I probably wouldn't have a problem doing it. But then again, I'm different. I would be like, fuck it.
Yeah. I'll just take double. I like all all injectables. Give me them all.
Yeah. That leads me to this. So you started the Lipocalypse by the new Granite supplements, and how's that going? Because bringing this up because you mentioned that in reference to Ripped Fuel, and I have a story about that.
Oh, good. Lipocalypse is awesome. I'm loving it. This is what I like about it, and this is how I'm using it, so, you know, listeners can kind of, you know, they get the truth on everything. I use ephedrine.
We have no reason not.
but I stack the ephedrine with the Lipocalypse rather than stacking it with caffeine. So, I mean, the major contributor to fat loss in Lipocalypse is going to be the T-Crine, right? The T-Crine is basically like the Cadillac version of caffeine, where your body does not really get resistant to it. So no matter what, you're going to get a buzz taking T-Crine. In relation to that, you're also going to get more efficient, you know, fatty acid liberation. So when you stack that with you know, ephedrine, which stimulates, you know, the CNS to help, you know, release fatty acids and increase that metabolism, I'm getting an effect like I did originally when I took fucking Rip Fuel back in, you know, the mid-90s. And it's great. It's fantastic. You know, my workouts are great. I'm getting leaner. Even though I'm taking cheat meals here and there, you know, it's not a big deal. It's just my metabolism has just become way more efficient using this stuff. And I love it. It's fantastic. It's one of the best things I've introduced into my diet.
I'm looking forward to. I ordered some of that arc reactor, and I'm looking forward to trying that because of the theacrine in it. I've never seen that except when Meadows talked about it with the whole other
whole Prime Nutrition thing.
Prime Nutrition scandal that wasn't in there. So I'm looking forward to seeing if I notice a difference with that than just straight caffeinated products. So I'm looking forward to getting that. But anyway, back to so I got a Rip Fuel story. Rip Fuel was the bomb when it was real.
Fuck yeah.
I did, but of course, like, I was a crazy teenager who everything was, excessive. And when you're a fat crazy teenager who's trying to lose weight. You'll go to you'll do anything to do that. So, and back then I didn't know. I went to GNC. I bought this Rip Fuel. I read the label and it's got all these things on it. And I go, well, it's over the counter. And these are herbs. They're not like, I didn't see drugs. What is that? I never could pronounce this right. Mao Hong.
Yeah. Mao Huang.
I think that was the one that converted to ephedrine, right?
It's an herb, and it's got, like, I think 25% of alkaloids, which is straight ephedra.
Ephedra, right. Yeah. So I get some of that, and I take it, and I don't feel anything. I'm like, this is weak, So a couple hours later, I take another one. Oh. And a couple hours later, I take another one. Because those recommended doses – they're just for the company to cover their ass. Hey, you can take all the whole bottle. Right? I mean, this is a 20-year-old fat kid, Like, trying to lose, 20, whatever I was, 19, trying to lose weight, right? So long story short is, all of a sudden, I started having palpitations. And my heart was flipping and flipping and flipping.
Mm-hmm.
And at that, of course, I wasn't a doctor then. I was more like a gangster than a doctor back then. I never thought I'd be anything in my life other than work at the gas station. But long story short is, holy shit, dude. And me being crazy, it's like, yeah, this must be in my head. So I keep taking the Rip Fuel, and 2 days go by, and now I'm in every other beat. I'm having a flip in my heart. Yikes. So I was like, oh my God, what the hell? And I had no idea, but I knew something was wrong. So I end up taking myself to the hospital.
Jeez.
And they hook me up, and I'm in what's called bigeminy. That's a premature ventricular contraction every other beat.
That's right. Yes.
That is dangerous, right? I mean, that's And so anyway, long story short, they ask me if I'm doing cocaine, if I'm doing crack. And I'm like, dude, I don't do drugs. I'm this and that. And they're like, well, something's making your heart irritated. Do you drink a lot of soda, coffee? I'm like, back then I didn't drink coffee, and I didn't start drinking coffee till 4 years ago, to be honest with you. And I'm like, but I am taking this, but it's just an herbal supplement. And the doctor looked at me, and he's like, how much are you taking? I'm like, I don't know. I think I've been taking 5 or 6 a day. He's like,
oh my God. Jesus Christ.
He's like, well, you're not going to die, but we need to keep you here and monitor you for a while until it's out of your system. And, man, I don't know if anyone has ever had a PVC, and I still get them every once in a while if I take too many stimulants or if I'm really stressed out. But basically what that feels like is like if you ever went down a roller coaster and you feel your belly drop.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Of course. Love that.
That's kind of – well, that's what that feels like, except it's in your heart.
Yeah, and you were standing still.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's doing it every other beat. I was like, oh, dude, I knew it. I was like, oh, my God, I'm having a heart attack. And I was such an idiot. So anyway, that was my rep. That's when I knew that it caused that shit. That shit's pretty strong.
See, you're one of those damn kids that got it fucking banned to begin with, because that's exactly what started happening. There's like those two kids that were taking Xenadrine. Oh no, they were taking Hydroxycut, which is basically the same thing as Rip Fuel back then. And they were working out in a fucking sauna suit sauna. And using Hydroxycut, and yeah, they both fucking died. And that's, I mean, these are the dummies that got Ephedra banned to begin with.
I can't lie. I was a knucklehead back then. I was dumb.
You were a contributor. See, that's
what happened. Oh man, that feels. But I lived. I lived through it, and I didn't take Rip Fuel again. And actually, at that time, I remember the doctor was like, "You can never drink caffeine again. You can never take stimulants. Oh, you're going to die if this." You know, he was trying to scare. So I remember for like a year, I didn't take anything. Like, I didn't even drink a soda with caffeine in it. I was like kind of freaked out, but that didn't last too much longer after I knew I was fine. But I lived through it. But yeah. I learned the hard way that, man, you got to know to take. If one is good, five isn't better with anything.
Yes. Wait. So you had the like the bodybuilding mentality back then too. It sounds like, right? Always excess. If one D ball is good, that means 50 is better.
Except back then, my goal was I just wanted to be the skinniest kid ever. Because I was the fattest kid ever at one point. You know what I mean?
Oh, I get you, man. I was a fucking fatty too. That's my goal. That's my lifelong goal is just to be skinny. And that's right now. All I want to do is be skinny.
We're trying to get to birth weight. Yeah, that used to be my joke. That's why I said that to you. I used to say that. How fat do you want to lose, Steve? I'm like, I want to be 9 pounds, 11 ounces.
You're a big baby.
You know what? But I got to give the Rip Fuel credit. I was one of the things I took during those 6 months I lost 100 pounds.
Holy shit! Yeah, absolutely, that'll do it. Yeah.
In 1992, I started. I'm not going to be fat anymore. In January, 1992, I was 300 pounds, and by summer I was 175.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah,
beautiful.
But it was all terrible though. It was terrible. I was eating. It was like straight anorexia.
Yeah, I mean,
no, and stimulants I could get a hold of, basically. I guess
it's I think all of us fatties have to kind of go through that, you know, and because it's like a jump off point, you know. It's like, you know, you kind of hit the ground running, and you figure out what works from there, because you realize I probably didn't do it right that first time around, you know. Even though I lost this much weight or whatever, you know, it gives you something to reflect on and improve on. So I think it's a natural course for all of us fatties, you know.
Yeah, like I said, all I wanted to do was not be the fat kid anymore, and I would do, you know what I mean. That's all I cared about. I didn't, you know what I mean. I would just didn't want to be the fat kid. I was running miles, and oh my god, it was crazy.
Oh yeah. I'm trying to think. I'm trying to think back to when I started training. Like I was already training in high school, but I was lifting weights, and you know, playing football. So that was different. It was mostly just, you know, eat, train, go play football, go practice, you know, that sort of thing. But in grade 13, we have grade 13. We had grade 13 in Ontario at the time.
Yeah, you told me that before.
Now it's gone. But that was my last year playing football. And I was just like, well, it's time to, you know, start bodybuilding. So I graduated and I moved to the States right away. And I went to the GNC because they didn't have any GNCs in Canada. I was just like a supplement store. I was like, holy shit, this is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And I saw a Rip Fuel stand. You know, it was the orange label with the frame picture of a guy's abs. That was it. That was on the bottle. I was like, this is it. I'm doing this. And that summer, I dropped, I think, like 30 pounds. I was just like shredded. I was like, holy shit. I went from fatty to being lean and hard, you know, just like sold. This stuff is magic.
That stuff was, ridiculous.
Yeah. But at the same time, all I was eating was tuna and peanut butter because I was, you know, a starving student and that's all I could afford.
You were in ketosis.
I was in ketosis for like
forever. It was a keto diet before it was popular.
That was actually how I dieted for my first show. And I'm still scarred to this day because I did 16 weeks of just cans of tuna and peanut butter. And then like a couple of whey isolate shakes. Oh, it wasn't even whey isolate. It was just fucking whey concentrate back then.
Whatever it was. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how I dieted, and I got in the best shape, you know, as I could, and that was good enough to take second in the middleweights at a tested show, you know?
Hell yeah. At a non-tested show.
So that was
well, right. You will get lean if you don't eat, that's for sure.
That's for damn sure. Yeah. But yeah, I'm still scarred from that because I to this day, I won't eat tuna. Like, I'll still buy it just in case. I run out of protein sources, but I'm just like, oh, God, I can't.
Yeah.
I have like a food aversion. It makes me want to puke. In fact, all fish does now. All.
Oh,
I don't,
really?
I don't even care how it's cooked. It doesn't matter. Like, I just look, even if I see them swimming around, same thing. Aversion. Like, I want to throw up.
I still love fish, man. I love to make my fish real crispy and I still love fish, dude.
Oh my God. It makes me dry heave. Just even watching them swim around, I'm just like, oh God, they're fucking grossing me out. Just the most disgusting creature on earth to me is a fish. Yeah, that's what happens.
That's what happens
when you develop a bad food aversion. That's what happens.
I remember, this is off, not really off top, but kind of, but you just made me think of, I remember you talk about supplement stores. I remember there was a supplement store, and I wish I'd have known more back then when I was a teenager. And it was like a little vitamin store, health nutrition shop in this little shopping center. And I remember going in there I remember seeing all this stuff now that I think about it, it was all like pro hormones.
Yeah, it was good stuff.
And they were over the counter. Right, yeah, but I didn't know anything. So I never like bought anything. I was like I was in there just looking at like metrics.
Yeah.
Rip fuel. But now that I think about it, they had like the original androstenedione. Yep. And
Norandro,
all that stuff, and it was this little mom and pop shop, and they had it all just like on the regular counters, you know? Supplements.
That shit was so expensive back then too. Like,
yeah, that's the other thing. I mean, I made $50 a week at a gas station, so I had to choose my battles.
I remember seeing
all that stuff way back then, and I mean, I never used it because I couldn't afford anything. I wouldn't do it anyway. But I remember now that I know what is this out there, all kinds of stuff, and this little mom and pop shop had it all.
Yeah. Yeah, that was always cool to see. We had back in Ottawa when I was first started training. We had little tiny stores here and there, but they were really select, like really few, and they didn't have that much stuff. But man, when I moved to the States, it was just like fucking Wonderland. It was everything was available. I was like, holy shit, this is a bodybuilding's paradise over here. It's a big deal. Yeah, I can't imagine training in Canada. Now it's different, you know. But even still, supplements are still a lot more expensive in Canada. So I don't know. I do order some whey isolate from Canada every once in a while when they have good deals because like the dollar is weak right now.
Right.
But so the exchange rate is fine. Plus I get free shipping to my mom and dad's house, right? Because they live in Toronto. So So that works out okay. But otherwise, man, US is the place to be still, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So let's what do you say we get to some questions here? We don't have that many questions, but we're gonna tackle them anyways. And this will be a relatively quick show, but hope people enjoy it anyways. Let's see here. I've got some questions. These are questions from our email. Oh, if you want to email your questions, clinicalmuscle@gmail.com. But first, I would just, go over to the Advices Radio Network and check out the forums. There's always a sticky there for Clinical Muscle and to submit your questions there. And, if you don't feel safe enough, doing it over there, which, is very safe anyways, send us an email. Those are the best ways to get us. We're always juggling so many different things that when people start sending them via Instagram message and direct messages and Facebook messages, they get lost, and I can't keep it straight,
Yeah, I'm sure there's questions that I told people, oh yeah, I'll we'll do that on the show from my a private message or whatever,
yeah,
and I'm
right.
sure I forgot.
Yeah,
right, so.
And I just dropped the ball. Like, I don't mean to,
But I don't think I've ever missed one off the forum page, and that's because I know where the last question left off at, so I just pick up whatever comes after that,
Yeah, yeah, but
so yeah, throw them on there if you can. If not, you can still use the email if if you feel like it's something it's too private or not safe or something.
Yeah, yeah. And your identities are always safe with us too. I mean, we don't unless you want us to say your name on the air, we won't. So, This is because this is like HIPAA stuff right here. You know what I mean? This is we're clinicians over here. You know, so we got HIPAA compliance. Yeah. Question: what are the doc's opinions on SARMs?
Oh, SARMs. Well, first of all, from my standpoint, you know, medical, legally speaking, obviously they're not medicine, right? I mean, they're not. So I've never prescribed them. I can't prescribe them. But, you know, from a bodybuilding standpoint, so I'll just go there. You know, obviously they're sold for research purposes only. So unless you have a pet manatee, really, you should, you can't, you know, you can't use them legally, technically, I guess. But long story short is, listen, I mean, these things are in research, right? I mean, they're still, if under investigation, sort of never been FDA approved, you know, they haven't been around a long time enough for me to really say, you know, of course you'll see where they're touted as not having low side effects, same sort of, you know, but you can get the same sort of results as PED, you know, as anabolic steroids and this and that. But from my standpoint, and I'm not condoning or, you know, obviously promoting or anything like that, but to, you know, we know people do this stuff, right? So here's the deal. From my standpoint, I've always been someone who is going to use what's tried and true, or prescribe what's tried and true. I've never been a doctor who's prescribed a medication that's been out on the market for a week, you know, because the drug rep gave me a pretzel or a baseball ticket.
One of those marijuana pretzels. Those are fucking delicious.
Yeah. So I'm not a big fan. I, first of all, the other reason is, like I said, the research chemicals, if you're purchasing these for non-research purposes, you could be buying aspirin in a capsule. I don't know. I mean, so I'm not a big fan. I hate to say this, but if someone was going to use a PED, I would say go with what's tried and true and learn and educate yourself about side effects and how to manage them and talk to your doctor, be safe, get your blood work done. I don't know. I think it's one of those things that's probably not worth the bang for the buck, my opinion.
Yeah. So, I mean, what is a SARM?
I mean, it may have. Go ahead.
So what is a SARM? It is a selective androgen receptor modulator. So one of my gripes with SARMs is that all of these HGH boosting or stimulating compounds are being labeled as SARMs, or people are getting them confused that they're SARM. It has nothing to do with SARM. MK677 or whatever other, you know, secretagogue are not SARMs because they don't stimulate the androgen receptor site. So we're talking about things like, what is it, S4 and there's like osteo something.
Osterine.
So osterine was originally developed like way, I think decades ago.
That was the original one.
Right, to help with bone density for elderly patients or people suffering from bone loss of some sort, because it was helping, and thus the name, Osterine, Ostabone. So, but these SARMs are, they play with the, you know, the androgen receptor site, and you don't really, I mean, they say that it's not supposed to, you know, stunt your pituitary axis, your hypothalamic pituitary axis. But I've seen it. I've seen it disrupt that axis. I've seen people come back with low testosterone. You know, I don't know. If you're going to play with your androgen receptors anyways, then why not go get the real thing? You know, that's just my thought on it. Why you want to play with something that's not even tried and true, like the doc was saying? There's hardly any anecdotal evidence behind it. I know some women like it because, you know, it is supposed to be lower side effect. But I'll tell you, one of the side effects of most SARMs is water retention and bloat. And I'll tell you what women don't like is water retention and bloat. They fucking hate it. I understand. I get it. I hate it too. So
there's also things that are out there that are labeled as SARMs that are not, and one of them is MK677, and that's a completely different. that I have a different opinion about.
Sure.
And also, there's another one, Carterine, which isn't a SARM.
GW, right? GW 55.
Right.
Fucking
so
something.
Them two products right there, I have a completely different opinion about, which we won't get into. But I just want to make sure. But they are going to be listed as SARMs, and technically they're not. The SARMs, I believe, are Osterin or Osterine, mm-hmm. Rad 40. Or 140, is it? Rad 40 or Rad 140. I think YK 11 is a SARM, right? It's more of the DHT, yeah. But these are research. You know, I can't prescribe them. I don't really know the side effects of them. And, of course, you know, like Veej was saying, if you're going to mess with your androgen receptor,
There's this compound called testosterone. I don't know.
Not condoning, not promoting. We're just giving our opinions. We know side effects of testosterone, right, Veej?
Absolutely.
We know the long-term effects. We know the benefits. We know the risks. These other things we don't. And like I said, you know, you really don't know what you're getting. So I don't really know. I guess it's a wait and see kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm just gonna go ahead and say nope. I'm gonna put my stamp of approval and just go say nah, no. Just go with the real thing. No SARMs, they're silly. They don't have any major use. If you're gonna play with your androgen receptors anyways, go for what the androgen receptor was made for, which is testosterone. You know, because that is at least produced by your own body anyways and has decades and decades of research. You'll know what to expect, you know.
And if you have a pet manatee and you want to see what happens, run some tests on your pet manatee.
There you go.
See what happens.
Yes, there you go. Play with all your androgen receptors, right?
I kind of agree. I think always good with tried and true stuff, which goes back to one of our conversations before about blood pressure medicines. That's why I'm a big fan of like sticking with the basics, lisinopril, hydrochlorothiazide, those kind of things. You know, we know metoprolol and we got tons of new stuff, you know, and every day. Oh, my God. I just saw – I know I'm tangential. I'm sorry.
I like it. That's what happens to me too, off the rails all the time.
I just saw a new weight loss medicine that pissed me off. I have no idea how this works, but basically it's a combination of naltrexone and Wellbutrin for weight loss.
Huh.
So I don't understand how blocking the opiate receptor and putting someone on an antidepressant is going to make them lose weight. So, you know, all these new, here's another one.
It must have something to do with appetite suppression, just taking away your appetite altogether.
It must, but they're showing this picture of all these obese people, and they're making it sound like this is going to be the next best thing.
Oh,
and I look
God.
At the – and they give it a good name. I think it's concave or consave or con – whatever. I don't know. And underneath it says what the two drugs are. And in my mind, medically, I'm going, I have no idea how that's – why – what is that? And I also – this is the kind of stuff. So all the newfangled stuff. So there's a medicine called Duexis, I believe.
Mm. Never heard of
it's for it's for pain. Well, it's a combination of 800 milligrams of Advil and Pepcid. And it's costing like $2,000. If you didn't have insurance, it would be like a $2,000 medicine. It's $10 over the counter. Yeah, so you got to be careful with all this newfangled stuff. You don't know. I got tangential on that, but that's why I stick to tried and true stuff. So I'm sorry.
That's fucking ridiculous.
Advil
with Pepcid in it. Pepcid AC.
Dude, it's a combination of ibuprofen. It's a combination of ibuprofen 800 and famotidine 26.x milligrams. And it is called Duexis.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
When I saw it, I almost wanted to call a lawyer and be like, that company needs a lawsuit. That's highway robbery.
These fucking pharmaceutical companies, man, they're just terrible, terrible companies. Terrible.
Veej, if you came to me and you were completely medical naive and I said, here's a sample of this new medicine, Duexis, man, it's gonna do great for you. You would be like, oh, thank you. If you didn't look at the two main ingredients, it's like.
Well, most patients don't read that.
I don't get sued by a company because maybe there's some other strategy. But my point is, I like tried and true stuff.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. So, tangents aside, SARMs are no good.
There we go.
Hey, Docs, I have a question. I was hoping you could help me out with. I am currently a medical student at an osteopathic school. Congratulations. And have been drained from studying all day, every day. While you were in school and busier than hell, how did you maintain your energy for the gym and manage your time with training? I've been struggling to find a balance and have seen a downward trend in strength and upward on the scale. Since you were both able to maintain a gym presence while going through your doc programs, I was looking for some input. Interesting.
Well, listen, I have to be honest. I think I talked about this before. I really didn't maintain my gym presence through my whole 4 years in medical school. But the first 2 years, I was able to do it. And, I think that, you know, really I was able to get to the gym, but my eating was the problem. And I still gained weight and I still put on a freshman whatever. But long story short is...
Was that the freshman 40? Is that what it is?
The medical school freshman 40 or whatever. But, you know, on top of that, in my first, I guess, semester is medical school, trimester or whatever we had, I had my daughter.
Oh,
and
shit.
I had my daughter in my first semester of my first year of medical school. Boy. Haley was born. And so not only did I have to deal with an infant, I also was going to medical school and my wife was working and I lived an hour and a half away. So I commuted every day.
Oh boy.
So what I did was, after I got to school, I would do one of two things. And this, I did pretty good for the first 2 years because in the first 2 years of at least medical school, you're in class 8 hours a day.
Yep.
You're not going to hospital A in the morning and running to hospital B at night and staying overnight. That's third and fourth year when you start doing your clinical rotations. And so I would do one of two things. I would either – my first class always started at 8. I would get there. I would leave my house really early, 5 o'clock in the morning, and I would get and go into the gym and do something while I was in there, a little cardio, a little quick workout. And all my workouts I was doing, I remember, were like – would be like whole body almost. Like I was just doing like sort of circuit training. I remember doing that just to try to keep. And then what I would do, and then what I also started doing, and it was actually my second year because that got crazy doing that. My second year, I would actually go during our little lunch break and I just wouldn't eat lunch. I would run over to the gym. I remember I did this almost every day. I'd run over to the gym, get like a 40-minute workout in real quick. I'd then run to the store and I'd buy those. I think I ate one every day. I'd buy those power bar protein bars.
Yeah, I remember those. Power Bar Plus. Right?
They had
plus
protein. Yeah, I ate the vanilla one.
They were pretty good, actually.
Yeah, they weren't bad. I remember eating that every day, and I would drink it with a Diet Coke, and then I'd go back to class and just have snacks or whatever. And I worked. I remember my second year, actually, I got in better of a routine, and I was actually – I remember I gained weight in the first year, was still trying to go to the gym. And my second year, actually, remember losing 14. I lost 14 pounds. I was able to lose some weight doing that. But, man, listen, it's not easy. And probably by the time you get to your third year, unless you live right near your school and I was done. I probably didn't train. I might have did some cardio and lifted at my house. But third and fourth year, man, it was I can't lie, I didn't maintain a gym presence.
Yeah.
I was able to finally get going again probably in my residency towards the end of first year, beginning of second, and that's really where I picked everything back up again.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, and we talk about this all the time on Bodybuilding Nerds Radio, and that has to do with just a passion, you know. Passion for living this. It's a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle choice, you know, whether you just, you know, had a kid or you're going to med school or you've got, you know, the busiest schedule ever. If it's something that you're passionate about and it is your style of life, you'll make it happen no matter what. it's like for the first, I think the first year of chiropractic school, you know, I wasn't my goal wasn't even school. My goal was bodybuilding. You know what I mean? So it's like,
yeah, see, I was married with an infant.
Yeah, you had different. Really, yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
So there you go. There's another thing. It all depends on your situation too.
Right. Yeah. So it's like, you know, I took a reduced load right away. Instead of taking 32 credit hours per trimester, you know, I cut it down to like 20 or 22 or whatever.
Yeah, we can't do that in osteopathic school. I know what he's going through. Right,
yeah. Now. So, but there was a point where I was just like, well, if I keep doing this, it'll take me fucking 6 years to graduate. And I was like, no thanks. You know, I'm not doing that. So, I went on the full load. But even then, you know, it was about planning and getting and having all my meals ready for the day, knowing what my schedule was, when I was going to have a break. Whenever I had a break, like around lunchtime, I would go do cardio. And then after training, after all my schoolwork was done or whatever, I would go train. So sometimes I'll be training at like 7:30 at night, 8:30 at night sometimes. But I didn't have a fucking life. So not that I have a life now either. But I mean, that was my life. You know, it would wake up, get my meals ready, go to school, cardio at lunch break, you know, and then, you know, whatever else, school, clinic, and then, you know, train. That was my life. I didn't have a 1 year old. You know what I mean? I didn't have a newborn baby. I was, you know, what was I? I was like 19, 20 years old, you know? So, I don't know. It's all about your lifestyle choice and how bad you really want it. For me,
yeah.
I've been wanting to be a bodybuilder since I was 7 years old. So, you know, I was going to do everything possible in order to get, and to this day, it's the same way. So it's like, unless you don't, if you don't have that inborn just passion and drive for bodybuilding or for progressing, you know, physically or whatever it is, it's not going to happen. You know, it's not really something that can be taught, I don't think. It's something that you have to kind of be, I don't know. It just has to drive your entire life, really.
I mean,
you know?
Yeah, and I think you nailed it too. I think it's completely situational. Listen, if I was a kid who lived on campus and was, you know, didn't have a wife and just my first child in medical school and live an hour and a half away, I guarantee I still would have went to the gym just about every day.
Yeah.
I would have got up at 5. I would have went and trained and then went to class for 8 hours and then went home and studied. That's probably what I would have done back then. But you know, I tried to keep doing that the first year and second year. But, for me, it just eventually, by the time I got the third year and I was in clinicals, at least at my school, I mean, I was at a different place every day. So sometimes I'd go away for a month up until, you know, another place. And so it really got difficult. It was hard. But like Veej said, if you want to do it, you just got to find the time. And it's situational. You know, your situation might be more like Veej's was than it is like mine. But look, this brings me to a funny story about med school. I remember the first day we went in class and they had all our notes in like outlines on a table with like, you know, you picked one up.
Yeah.
Right. And I remember seeing this stack of papers and it was in the, and you had to put it in a binder, you know, it had the holes in it. And dude, it was like a phone book. Right.
Oh, and, yeah. I remember.
I remember getting to my desk, sitting next to my friend, who's now an orthopedic surgeon in California, and he was the first guy I met there. And I was like, hey, we start talking. I'm like, this doesn't look too bad, you know, for the first semester. And it was, I think, I forget what class it was. And he's like, I think that's for the first test in 3 weeks. I was like, oh, this is going to be good.
Yeah.
So I remember getting home that night and I said, I put the thing down on the table and Christine's like, Is that for your class? I'm like, yeah. She goes, that's not terrible. I'm like, it's for the first test in 3 weeks. She's like, oh shit.
Yeah.
And I knew it was on then. I was like, we got to get this, put this up, man. That was crazy. But I tried my best. I'll take Veej's advice. If you really want to do it, find the time. And it's situational, man. It's gonna be harder for some people. It's gonna be, you might have, your situation might not be perfect, but if you buckle down, I'm sure you could work it out. It's just a matter of putting in the time. And, you know, if you're a partier, you might not want to be doing that. It depends on your goals, you know?
Right. Do you go out and party on the weekends? Are you drinking at night? Are you, it's like, what kind of social life do you have, if any? You know, it's like all these things, they add up and they suck away all your time, you know?
I mean, the one positive of med school is like it's like a 5 day, at least the first 2 years, it's like a 5 day a week job, right? So they don't have school on weekends. So there's two training days right there.
Absolutely.
You could train twice a day. It depends on what you want to do. So, you know, you got Saturday and Sunday off. Do you want to go out and get your buzz on
and
pick up chicks, or do you want to go train? I mean, that's kind of what you have to put. It's all about priorities in your situation. If you got five kids and you're 40 years old in med school, that's going to be way more difficult than if you're 24 and just graduated from college and you live on campus.
That's
the truth.
Look, two of my trimesters back to back were, I was going basically from 7 a.m. Like, I had to be at school, I think, at like 7 a.m. And I wouldn't get out until like 8:30 at night because we had clinic at nighttime too, sometimes even later.
Uh-huh.
So what I had to do was fucking get up at 4 a.m. and go train and do my cardio and get it all done for the day. That's what I had to do. So I did it. You know, it wasn't ideal. No, but I mean, that, you know, that's what I had to do in order to keep on my particular schedule that I wanted to be on. But like, you know, like the doc said, I wasn't partying. I never partied fucking a day in my life. That's just not something that ever drove me. You know, my goal was always to be lean and hard and have lots of muscle, and that was priority number one for me. So you'll make it happen.
Yeah, you can just look at your schedule, work in your time, even if it means getting up at, you know, if your class starts at 8, if you got to get to the gym at 6:30, knock it out. I mean, prep your meals once or twice a week, or, you know, shit. I don't even think I mean nowadays with shakes and all kinds of other stuff, you can make it.
Yeah, so much easier. I mean, there's so many.
You could make it happen.
I mean, yeah, it's more expensive, but you could even fucking order up meals from a prep company already. You know, it's like these things are all over the place now. It's more expensive, but I mean, it works, you know.
Factor in your meal prep company into your student loans.
There you go.
That will pay it back later. Who cares?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. For every dollar you're spending, you're paying back four, just so you know. So.
I got one more suggestion, since he's in an osteopathic school or a medical school. It doesn't matter if it's osteopathic. When you get out, you might want to consider radiology, dermatology, or plastic surgery.
Go dermatology. Absolutely. You get a lot of cash business with dermatology. Your hours are beautiful. You don't never on call. Go dermatology. Yeah, absolutely.
Don't do family medicine. You'll end up doing a bodybuilding podcast for free with VJ Purity. How about that?
That's what happens. Yep. That's what happens. Choose wisely, my friends.
Choose wisely.
Yeah, radiology is awesome. Radiology is great too. But you can be on call with radiology too. That's the thing, right?
Guy who was a couple years ahead of me in residency and was my neighbor around the corner until he graduated his 5-year residency program. This dude, as soon as he graduated and got his first job, I'll just put it this way. He don't live here anymore. It was like 6 months and he moved into the big 9,000 square foot house.
Sure.
He had screens in his house for MRI readings at home and all this stuff.
It's working like, from home, man. That's fucking life, you know? That's good
stuff.
Well,
look, them dudes put in the 5-year residency, though, man. That's time. Just like surgeons. Yeah. Plastic surgeons put in 8-9 years, you know? My buddy right now.
I mean, they've got to do their residency. They got to do fellowship. I mean, they're on like a long-term course there.
Yeah. My friend who's out in California right now, who I graduated with, who, by the way, was older than me in med school already. He did a 5-year orthopedic surgery, and then he did 2 years of hip and knee fellowship at University of Pennsylvania.
Great.
So he's hip and knee specialist now. But he put in 7 years. After we graduated.
Yeah.
So he deserves everything he gets for that. You know.
Absolutely. That's I mean, you got to think. You got to think. What, 4 years pre-med, 4 years med. And then 4 to 8 more years, depending on what your residency and fellowship is. That's
my residency in family medicine was 3.
Yeah.
He did 7.
Yep. Exactly. That's what happens, man. It's crazy. It'll pay itself off. Yes. But man,
oh yeah, he's good now though.
You are investing your time, wisely.
But yeah, you can get it done, man. Just gotta plan, and you gotta be prepared, and you gotta put your priorities first, you know, depend on your situation.
Yeah. Is there any truth about taking T3 at nighttime is more beneficial than taking it first thing in the morning on an empty stomach? I read that T4 converts into T3 while you're sleeping, so by taking it at night, it would boost that mechanism.
So I'm going to just go by a medical standpoint, the way I would prescribe thyroid medicine, T3 or T4, whatever you want to talk about. The dosing says once a day. It doesn't tell me to do it at night. Doesn't tell me I have to do it at noon. Doesn't tell me I have to do it at 4:30 and a half.
Right.
So the answer to this question from a doctor's standpoint is I don't think it matters. I know anecdotally people say take it at night, and I've heard arguments both ways. I honestly think if you take it the same time every day, you're going to get results.
Yeah, that's really the best thing to do. I mean, I don't know about the whole nighttime thing. Look, if your body converts T4 into T3 at nighttime because of an HGH surge, yes, I understand that. But if you take T3 at nighttime, you're not going to get any conversion at all because there's going to be no need for that T4 to be converted over. It works on the same biofeedback loop that, say, testosterone would, or you know, any other hormone that you're replacing. You know,
when you're taking exogenous T3, you're stopping the process. So you're shutting down the TSH. You're shutting off your pituitary. So it's not producing anything anyway. You're taking it.
So, I mean, if you really, really want to split hairs here, and this is splitting hairs, I would take your T3 first thing in the morning in one shot. And then by the nighttime, look, T3 has a relatively short half-life. Okay, medicinally, I think it's like 8 to 10 hours half life or something. So by the time you're going to be going to bed anyways, your T3 reserves will be depleting. Your natural T4 will start converting over while your HGH rises as you sleep. That's probably your best option if, like I said, you're splitting hairs like that. So
I agree. I think it's splitting hairs, and from a medical standpoint, I'm not an endocrinologist. So hey, maybe I'll do some research and talk to some endocrinologists, but. Whenever I've dosed any kind of thyroid medicine, it's once a day. If they want to take it, but generally it's in the morning. I say take this. And for me, really, it comes down to compliance. If people do things as soon as they get up, they tend to do better that way.
Yeah.
As opposed to, I'll wait till midnight to take my Synthroid or my Cytomel or whatever kind of thyroid hormone you're on. And then they fall asleep and they don't take it at all. Oh shit.
Right.
Yeah. And then you're all over the place because you took it in the morning. Now you got to take it at night again. Well, maybe I should split it up. So I agree with you, Veej. I think first thing in the morning.
Just consistency. Just be consistent, whatever you're doing, you know?
And I bet if you, this goes kind of back to the SARMS thing, except that this is, if you have a prescription for this and you wanted to see if you noticed a difference, start taking it at night. See if you notice a difference. That there's nothing wrong with that. I bet you don't.
Yeah, right.
I bet you don't notice any difference in energy or weight loss or metabolism. Yeah.
I bet you don't use as many bed sheets at night. You're pretty hot, right?
Yeah. And look, without exogenous thyroid hormone of any kind, our body's making that all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it absolutely. Doesn't just make it at night. It's sent. Your body is sensing everything all day long, keeping things level.
Mm-hmm.
If your T4 drops, your T3 drops, your TSH is going to kick on. You're going to start producing it. It's going to keep it balanced all day long. So, I think for this one, I would take it first thing in the morning.
Yeah, yeah. I know my TRT guy prefers me to take one dose of my T3, T4 first thing in the morning, and then another one 8 hours later. It doesn't matter to me. Like we said, we're splitting hairs. You're playing with a half-life here. You're getting a different valley, different peak, that sort of thing. Doesn't matter to me. Results are the same in the end, just as long as my blood work is good and I'm feeling good.
Exactly. Yeah. Let me ask you this. I'm just out of curiosity. What is the mix dose of your T3 T4 supplementation? What is the mix of that? Is it 25 T4 and what is the mix of that? 100.
I take two capsules a day. One capsule is I believe it's 16 micrograms of T3 to 24 micrograms of T4. So I take that. I basically just take two capsules a day, and it keeps my
take them separately, a T3 and a T4, or is it a combo pill?
It's a combo pill. Yeah, yeah.
So you take about 50 and 32.
Right. Yeah, that's where I'm at right now. I think it's that high because it's not. It's a synthetic. I just think that the old fucking pig thyroid that works excellently, you know. I think I could take a much lower dose than that and be fine.
I was just curious of the dose of that. Yeah. That's good.
It's just a little bit higher end because I just think when you're dealing with synthetics like that, especially T3 synthetic, when there's no real reason for to be using synthetic T3 when you can just go to the fucking farm and pick up some T3 from, you know, compounded pig liver or pig thyroid, you know, and get the same results with less micrograms. It's just that I think the synthetic, your body, some people just, they don't, it's not absorbed maximally. So say I'm taking 32 micrograms a day. I would say I'm probably really only getting about 20 to 22 micrograms a day, you know, to keep myself in that normal threshold blood work wise, you know? So
yeah, that makes sense. So I think consistency is key here. Yeah. Take it once a day, take it in the morning. If you want to try taking it at night, take it once a day, take it at night. I don't think you'll see any difference at all.
Yeah. Yeah. We got another question here. Just bear with me. It's a little bit longer. It gives a little bit of background information. So, hey docs, have you ever prescribed Chantix to someone who wanted to quit smoking? What kind of sides did your patients encounter if you did? Oh, this is just a separate question. Okay, there's another question after this.
Yeah. Yes, I've prescribed it a whole hell of a lot, to be honest with you.
Explain to me I don't know what Chantix is.
Yeah. So Chantix is a medicine that basically, it's a nicotinic receptor agonist and blocker.
Gotcha.
So basically what it does, to make a long story short, is it binds to the nicotine receptor, stimulates it, and blocks it from any further nicotine attaching, right? Mm-hmm. So what happens is, as opposed to like giving someone Nicorette gum, where you tell them, look, if you start this gum, you can't smoke because you could overdose on nicotine. You know, you get the stimulant side effects, heart rate increase. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm, sure.
As opposed to Chantix, which binds to the receptor, stimulates it, and blocks it from any further nicotine. So what that does is two things. It satisfies the nicotine craving, and you could smoke till the cows come home, and it's not going to hurt you. You're not going to overdose on nicotine.
Okay.
Because it's not doing anything. It can't get there. And what... So here's the positive, and he wants to know about negatives, and I got to be honest, I've had quite a few of them. Mm-hmm. When people start Chantix who are successful with it and don't have horrible side effects, what they tell me is this: they literally forget to smoke.
Oh wow, great! That's not bad at all.
They'll start smoking for the first week, and we tell them, you know, keep going. And it usually comes in a titration pack where we'll start you off at a dose and till we get you up to a certain dose. And people will literally say, holy shit, doc, on day five – or whatever, I'm making stuff up, right? On day five, I realized it was 9 o'clock at night, and I didn't even think about smoking.
Wow.
No, it really works well. Now, here's the caveat. It will make you quit smoking. It is very good at that. However, it does have some dastardly side effects that people just can't tolerate, which sucks. And the biggest one, this is crazy. So I'll talk about – so the one, let's call them general side effects that are just like make it intolerable, is nausea. Nausea upsets them.
Oh, yeah.
And people get super sick. Some people get super ill from it to the point where they're like – oh, yes, I quit smoking, but I had to stop it. And then as soon as I stopped, I start smoking again.
Ah, shit, yeah.
Because once it releases, you're going to get those cravings back. Unless it's been a certain amount of weeks, but most people get that right in the beginning, and they're like, screw that. Now, the second – so these are the top ones I get. The second one, and this is a crazy one, is Vivid Dreams. People's dreams, they will quit the medicine. It's not scary dreams. I guess they could be, but generally what I'm told or reported and side effects, the dreams are so vivid that they can't do it.
Freaks them out, huh? They're hallucinating or something.
Yeah, you the dreams are so real that it's stressful, anxiety provoking. You're crying in your sleep because someone's dying or they're seeing bright lights and like so vivid dreams. And yeah, some people have had nightmares, but really the just what I've been told is and it's listed as a side effect is vivid dreams. They're just too intense that they can't stay on the medicine. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that is crazy. Because I know people have vivid dreams with using HGH and even cannabis, you know. But,
oh, wow.
But nobody fucking complains about their vivid dreams. I think it's different with nicotine addicts and smokers because so much of their anxieties are decreased because of nicotine. It's a dependency thing. So they don't know what to do, you know, when there's no nicotine in the system. They can't handle anxiety. So I can see that. I can see how those vivid dreams might fuck them up.
And the last part is which is what we would call like almost a black box warning, but I don't think there is a black box warning. Maybe there is, I forget. They can provoke suicidal stuff, psych stuff, which you would not prescribe this to someone with a psych history. Mm-hmm. Let's say if you gave it to a schizophrenic who was on medicine, it will make that 100 times. It could make it 10 times worse. If you gave it to a depressed person who's like had suicidal depression in their past, it could make them want to kill themselves. So they're the serious reactions, basically psych stuff. So, you know, one of the screening questions you need to know your patient is, this person have a history of depression? Is this person on any psych meds? Is this person have any, you know, things like that? And the other thing is, you know, you need to really screen them because it actually can increase even homicidal ideation.
Holy smokes.
If someone's a little crazy, that, long story short is, if someone's crazy, it can make them really crazy.
Holy fuck.
And then there's a long list of other things. But honestly, okay, to that point, I've never had anyone have that issue because I was smart enough not to give it to anyone who would have that issue. But so long story short is, Chantix is great if you're not – don't have any, psych problems. And if you don't get nausea and you don't get the vivid dreams, you will quit smoking. It does. It's very, people have been very successful with it.
God damn, man. All these meds are so fucking dangerous. Unreal.
Listen, I've had some great success with that, but then I've had just, it's weird. Some people are like, holy shit, them dreams were the worst thing. I can't do it. I'd rather die of lung cancer. Isn't that nuts?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So yes, I have prescribed it. Yes, I've had success, and yes, I've had failures. And the failures generally were from those things I just outlined.
Nice. Good to know. Last question, and this is the longer one with a little bit of a case history, but we like case history. So to the 1.5 docs.
This one might be more one you have to tackle little bit.
I see. I only get to read these as we're recording the show, so I never I like to be surprised. So let's go ahead. Let's see what he says here. I'm considering running Shren Ace for the first time. He wants to run 250 milligrams a week. Since I also have joint pain, especially in the shoulders, I like to run a little DECA during my cycles too, 200 to 300 milligrams per week. Since these both have strong progestin natures, I'm concerned about the estrogenic side effects of combining both compounds, especially for gyno. At such low doses of both, is there really anything to worry about? Other considerations, I will also be on test 600 milligrams a week, ADEX 0.5 milligrams every other day, and Pramiprexol 1 milligram a day for restless leg syndrome. Huh, interesting. His name is I don't want to say his name, but
I think I copy that.
He is 42 years old, 5'9", 195, and 14% body fat.
Well, you know, I can't sort of give advice on cycles and trend, and you know, I don't prescribe that stuff. It's not a medical thing. But what I did focus on is the one thing about this, and I'm going to let you do that. You know, sort of give your opinion on that. The the Deca for the joint pain, the nandrolones, I know that they are prescribed by some HRT clinics. Mm-hmm. They're added to hormone therapy for that purpose. But I honestly, personally, don't think medically they have that great of a benefit for that. I think we have so much people with arthritis and joint pain and back pain and knee pain. If it was that successful, I think it would be mainstream. Mm, yeah. I think we'd use it a lot. I know anecdotally people say they feel it, they can tell, and I know that HRT clinics can throw it in there, and I think they do that under the guise of it's going to help your joint pain, really just to add another compound in there for someone. So I don't think you need that for that purpose. That's just my opinion. And then I'm going to let you tackle the other part about the trend.
Yeah, I don't think
that's just my opinion as a doctor. That's my opinion as a doctor on that part of it.
Yeah, first of all, if you've never run trend before, 250 milligrams per week is not a small dose. I will say that it's not. It's look, when you think about it, Dorian Yates, all right, Mr. Olympia from 1992 till 97, per week, he only cracked open two bottles, two amps of Tren a week, and that was the old the Tren Hex. You know what I mean? I forgot what the brand name was, but it was I can't remember right now. But that was a 75 milligram solution that he was taking twice a week. Okay, so that's 150 milligrams. This is for a fucking 300 pound bodybuilder. So this stuff is powerful. I think, personally, and this is my opinion, 250 milligrams per week is not a low dose. That is one of the higher end doses that you can use. I know there's fucking crazy people out there that like to use a gram of Tren or 750 milligrams of Tren or whatever. I just think it's unnecessary, especially for a first time. You don't know how you're going to respond. You always want to start, if you've never used a compound before, start with the lowest amount that you can possibly get away with using and go up from there. So start lower. My recommendation would be, to start at like 180 milligrams or something like that a week. Okay, 150 to 180 milligrams a week of Tren Ace and see how it goes from there. At the same time, I would not be using DECA, especially if gyno is an issue. I would eliminate that.
I agree with the DECA thing.
Yeah.
Especially because he wants to use it for the joint issues. And I just, as a doctor, if I could use that for people, I would be using it. But I can't. I would be prescribing that. I would love to see people's joints get better if I gave them 200 milligrams of nandrolone, but it's not happening in America.
I would like to see like an MRI of.
And
like,
by the way, Dorian, I think used Parabolin.
Parabolin, that's it. Yep.
It was like 76.6 milligrams twice a week. Yeah.
Parabolin, that was like
something like that. 76 milligrams twice a week was what the old school, something like that. I remember saying that.
And Parabolin was a mix of Tren Ace and Tren Hex, So.
And I think he said that he also only took 10 milligrams of Anavar for like a little bit before the show.
Yeah.
Like one.
Yeah, one.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
But I mean, I would like to see an MRI of someone that's been using with like that has had like, degenerated tendons or so or ligaments, and then, 6 months on 100 milligrams of DECA and then to get an MRI of that area and just see if there's any actual recuperation or if it's just relief through water retention. You know what I mean? I have a feeling it's more of the latter.
I would think if anything, it would be that too. Now, who knows in other countries? I'm a U.S. doctor. I have no clue what they do in Kuwait. I don't know. Whatever. But I do know that I don't think we would hold back on patients. Well, I shouldn't say that. Who knows? But I know that it's not used. The HRT clinics use it, and they have their reasonings, I guess. But if it was that good at that, I'm sure there would be some more popular use of that.
Yeah. So, I don't look, if this guy is sensitive to gyno, I would not mess with two different nor testosterone type products here. I would just run the trend alone along with the test because, DECA, you are going to get estrogenic type side effects. With the Tren, you could absolutely get estrogenic side effects, progestin type side, prolactin type side effects. Compounded with that, he's on 600 milligrams of test, which is not a small dose. You know, I comparatively, I guess it's small considering what people are doing out there. But that is not, you know, that is not like a fucking, you know, replacement dose. You know what I mean?
It's not. That would be great if it was. Yeah. For some.
It is one of the higher, you know, for someone who's not like a top level amateur or whatever. That's like 600 is a hefty dose of testosterone.
If you add up all his compounds, he's doing about a gram a week, right, or more.
Sure.
It'd be 10-50.
Yeah. Yeah. I would keep the test 600, you know, keep the Arimidex every other day and a Prammy. That's fine. But I would drop the Deca out. I just don't think it's necessary. And then start low with the Tren, you know, just see how your body responds to the Tren and the test alone. You don't need to be throwing in all these other wild cards, especially if you've never used another product before. That's my opinion. And especially considering, you know, man, if this was me, you know, and that was my body, this is a nightmare cycle for me. Just a nightmare. Cause it's like I can already feel the gyno symptoms. I can feel like the water retention, the bloat, the feeling terrible. This is like, and I'm very sensitive to like estrogenic side effects and gynecomastia type side effects too. So, this is a nightmare for me, but, you want to try the Tren, just start low, eliminate the Deca. It'll only, you know, save you a headache down the road. You can get away with it, you know. It's not gonna hurt your joints. It shouldn't, you know. Keep the test where it is. And you know, if you start getting these estrogenic side effects because of the Tren, and they can absolutely start, you know. Tren doesn't convert to estrogen, but through indirect pathways, your estrogen will rise. You can always bump your Arimidex, you know, to remedy that if that were the case. But start low. That's always our recommendation here, and then go from there. You know, judge it by, you know, week to week and see how you're feeling and stuff. So, but that's kind of my opinion on it. That's my I'm not an aggressive coach anyways. You know, so when it comes to
I'm not a coach, which is why I let you. Right. Yeah. Because I knew you'd give a. I mean, I can't give an answer on that, and you're going to give a better one anyway.
I
could.
Yeah. I don't. I just. You know. Like I said, I'm not. When it comes.
I handle
to...
the Chantix questions. The lisinopril, the ACE inhibitors. You know, the cholesterol. You handle the Tren questions. I'm okay with that.
What about Tren and nicotine receptors? How does that work out?
I have no idea.
But
let me go. Yeah. Let me ask Siri. Siri.
Yeah. So
Siri probably would find something.
That's kind of my opinion on it. You know, I like to keep stuff to a minimum, especially if I'm trying something new that I never tried before. So and you always want to eliminate, possible variables that are unnecessary. You know what I mean? So kind of look at it from that angle and then kind of just go from there. I fucking hate Tren anyways. Like I don't like it at all. Like I've tried it a few different times. I've always stopped within like 2 weeks of trying it. I've even tried like, remember when that, I forgot what it was called, but it was like an over the counter oral. It was a pro hormone that basically turned into Tren. I think Blackstone Labs had a variation of it at
Trenivar.
Trenivar. That's it. Yeah.
I think they had that at the mom and pop shop.
Yeah, I'm sure.
No, that was longer ago than that. At the mom and pop shop, they had all the original stuff.
Oh, I'm
like,
sure. I'm sure.
Yeah, like yeah. I remember reading. I don't know if it was an old Muscular Development back then or a Flex or something. They're talking about androstenedione. And I remember seeing that on the counter and I was like, what is that? You know, I didn't mess with it. First of all, probably like you said back then, that stuff was probably $100 in the mom and pop shop.
Oh, fuck yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah, I can't remember what else. I can't remember some of the original stuff, but they had it all lined up, man. They had a whole step place. It was a pretty good little place, man. Like
what year? About what year was this? Like what?
I'm going to say 19. My parents moved where I grew up. In 92, I'm going to say about 3?
Oh, okay. So yeah, Andrew was just starting to pop up, barely.
Maybe it might have been. So I wasn't married. Nah, maybe it was like 94, 90 something. Because I wasn't married. We were living with my parents, me and Chrissy. So yeah, it was in the early 90s, I believe. I mean, I'm getting old, dude. That was like 100 years ago.
So those are like the first gen of like the pro hormones. So they were like, they were all like estrogen in a bottle, essentially, is what they were.
I remember seeing, yeah, oh yeah, exactly. Yeah. I remember what I used to buy when I used to go there. I bought the box of, I used to save my money to get the single pouch. Remember the box of Metrics?
Oh, for sure, absolutely. We still got that. Yeah.
Metrics came in a box with the single pouch of shakes. I remember buying that there, and I remember buying the Rip Fuel.
Hell yeah!
And I remember buying Twin Lab liquid aminos.
Oh, in a box. God.
I think it was a tablespoon.
Yeah, so gross.
Remember, that shit tastes like shit. Remember that?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My protein, I remember, was I used to buy designer protein.
Designer whey. Yeah, designer protein.
Yeah. Yeah. That was pretty good shit, if I remember right. But
not too bad. I mean, it was as far as whey goes, that was one of the better tasting ones back then. Today, it would be god awful. But I
remember buying a bunch of EAS stuff. I remember something called Betagen.
Hell yeah. Dude, I love Betagen. That was like, my go-to. Like
It tasted good.
Yeah, it tasted like Tang, and it was a mixture of HMB and creatine, and that was the bomb, dude. I fucking love Betagen.
I remember buying that there. I remember I'd buy Beta. I would save my money, and I remember getting Betagen and Rip Fuel and the Metrics, and then I'd get the designer protein. What else did I get there? God.
So you got the Myoplex from EAS, did you?
Yes, I remember the Myoplex, but I think I was a Metrics guy. I remember eating, drinking a lot of those pouches.
Man, all that stuff gave me diarrhea bad, and I didn't even know it. I just figured that's what it was supposed to do.
I don't remember that.
I remember, you
didn't pass the gold standard gut test.
No, gosh, no. Hell no. Fail. Left and right. Everyone failed.
That shit tasted good, if I remember right.
Betagen was good, man. Betagen tasted good. And then they had their original, like the when they brought creatine to the market, it was called Phosphagen. And then they upped the ante and they made Phosphogain. Do you remember Phosphogain?
Yes! Yeah.
It had protein and carbohydrates, a little bit of fat, and then 5 grams of creatine preserving. That shit was awesome, and it tasted good, man. You get it in like vanilla or chocolate. It was so good.
I remember I bought this kit from not a GH kit.
Right.
All right, let's not get that twisted. Now, yeah. I bought this kit, and I can't remember what it was. God knows what it was. It probably was some kind of anabolic or something. I don't know. But because back then I didn't know anything.
It wasn't a cybergenics kit, was it?
I don't know, but it had like stuff you put in your droppers under your tongue.
Oh, sublingual drop. That's funny.
All a bunch of different kind of stuff. And I remember you took this one at this time and this one at this time. Oh my god. I used to be so much money on that shit.
Oh my god. What a waste. Oh my god.
I lost the weight. Then I started lifting. You know what I mean? I was trying to. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would run it in there with $50, and whatever I could get for $50, it was new. I'd try it, you know.
Man,
Betagen.
Betagen was awesome. Phosphogain was unreal. I remember, like within like 2 weeks, like my arm size increased like an inch and a half just from the glycogen retention, the creatine swelling. That was awesome. Yeah, I remember hitting poses downstairs in my basement and looking at my arms and going, holy shit, like in awe. Like I was like, unreal.
I think I want to buy. Oh, you know what made me, the original, this, now this is fast forward in years later, but the original, oh God, what was the pre-workout? What's
Ultimate Orange?
I remember buying BSN. What's BSN's?
This is way after.
This is fast, but I'm talking about diarrhea. You mentioned diarrhea. What's the pump?
Nitrix. Is it Nitrix or is it?
No, that's the pump. No, this is the NO Explode.
NO Explode. That's right.
The original NO Explode. I remember buying that, and it gave me the worst shit ever.
Really? Wow.
That shit was disgusting.
I didn't like
it. It was immediate. I was in, smell being in the YMCA, I drank it, and 10 minutes later, I was in the toilet just losing fluid.
So gross. I never tried anything from BSN that wasn't garbage, to be honest. Like, I remember the Syntha 6.
I know, that's the only thing
Syntha 6 tasted really good, but it gave me diarrhea immediately. It was like right through me, you know.
Yeah, my God, baited so. You. Now I want to find a bottle of them old Twin Lab aminos that tasted like shit and see what was in it. I want to Google that. Remember, they tasted like medicine almost.
Yeah, it tastes like Robitussin. Yeah, I remember. Yeah, it was just all it was was aminos from collagen synthesis. Essentially, it was collagen.
Well, I didn't even know what aminos were. I just saw it and I was like, "This looks what? Yeah, let me take this. It looks."
It was like 2 grams of amino per tablespoon. That's so stupid. You could have had a tablespoon of tuna and gotten 3, 4, or 5 grams of protein. You know?
Oh yeah, see, that's what I thought, and that's what I thought. Carbs build it muscle.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Back then.
Oh, my God.
I got to eat more carbs. I got to go to the gym with all these carbs in my system so I can get jacked. Oh, my God. I was so stupid.
You know, I had this nutrition teacher in chiropractic college at one of our classes, digest nutrition. And he said in class one time, he was an Indian guy, too. So he was like, protein does not build muscle. Carbohydrates build muscle. And immediately I wanted to fucking flip out on him. I was like, I can't believe a guy this dumb is teaching this class. I could teach this class and they would learn way better. Even at that stage of the game, you know, I was like, carbohydrates build muscle. You're a teacher. You're a professor who's been doing this for 30 years. Oh my.
And of course, he
was like 5'2" and like obese, right? He's the one teaching the class. I was like, come on.
Yeah. You should lose weight. Eat 6 pastas a day.
Yeah, right. Carbohydrates.
That's funny.
I still remember that to this day because I flipped out. So, but
good stuff.
Yeah,
man.
Good stuff. Good trip down memory lane there for a little bit with all the supplementation that we used to waste our money on. There was some good stuff though. There was some good stuff like Betagen, yeah. Phosphagen, Phosphagain. That shit was all awesome, man.
I forgot what was in the Betagen.
One last thing about supplements was one of the first proteins I ever tried was 100% beef from Weider. And I only ever bought it because I remember Lou Ferrigno. It was I think it was in one of the Flex magazines. It was Iron Man. And it was an ad with a lady. She was like hugging. She was all over Lou Ferrigno. And he was holding up this big 5-pound bucket of 100% beef protein. And I was just like, oh, my God, I think I need that, of course. Right? That shit was delicious, and it had no diarrhea from it. But they only ever made it for, like, 3-4 years and done, you know. Switched over to, like, the Megamass 2000, Megamass 4000. So.
Oh, I remember the weight gainers. I remember trying them.
Those were delicious as hell, man. Loved it.
Yeah, the terrible
for building muscle, but they were.
Just put weight and fat on you. I learned that quick. Oh, God, that was good stuff.
Yeah.
I've never been able to do a beef protein. I don't even like carnivore or whatever it's called. I just can't bring myself to drink a ground up cow. I don't know. Whatever's in it.
Well, here's the
thing. That thought makes me grossed out. I don't know why.
Back then, the price of beef wasn't, you know, as astronomical as it is today. So I'm guessing it was a lot more authentic back then. But if you see a beef protein isolate today or a beef protein anything, all you're getting is like power washed carcass. You're not even getting fucking like sirloin or anything. You're getting collagen from beef bone, tendon, ligaments. That's it. That's where your beef protein is coming from. So, yes, nasty. No thanks.
Yeah, I'll pass. I'll stick with just eating chicken and having a shake here and there. I would
go back to tuna if that was the case. If that was my only option.
you're kind of making me want some tuna. I might have to have some today with some onions in it. I love it.
How do you make tuna more tuna disgusting? Throw onions on it. That'll do it.
Throw onions and a little bit of relish.
Hey, what? Good. It's not so bad. Tuna salad used to be okay. It's still tuna though to me. I can't do it. You know?
Yeah, I still like it. I mean, yeah. I don't eat a lot, but it's good every once in a while. On some lettuce, it's good to go.
Well, Doc, that's all the questions we have, and that's about as long as we can go for memory lane today. We'll be back probably next week. Get your questions in so we have got we've got more stuff to talk about. Again, clinicalmuscle@gmail.com, or of course, and make this your first stop, actually, over at the Advices Radio Network forum. That's probably the best place to get all our questions in one concise place. And of course, it's fun to just participate with everybody over there too.
Post those questions up on the forum over there. We would makes it a lot easier. Email's always available if you got something super super private. But all good questions today. I like. I think they were cool.
Yeah.
Hope everybody enjoys the show.
Yep.
I did, and I'm looking forward to seeing everybody at the Arnold. That'll be cool.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
We'll be back probably next week. But until then, the doctors are out.
Have a good day, everybody.